Welcome to Reels and Rounds, the fishing and hunting show for outdoorsmen by outdoorsmen. Visit us on the web at reelsandrounds.com.
We're mainly talking about guiding trips, but do you ever go out just by yourself? And if you do, what is your lake of choice, your personal lake of choice, when you go out for fun?
You know, I fell in love with Crescent Lake about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It's a beautiful lake. It's 50-foot visibility, cold, clear water. There's Mackinac in there, which I have enjoyed catching. And then the browns do well in there, too. So that's just a lake where it's peaceful. I think I have more solitude personally for myself when I get out on over there. And unfortunately, it's in the biggest drought it's been in in about 15 years, and it's really low right now. So that's going to be an impact on it for the next few years, I'm afraid.
When we go through a drought like that, how does that affect the fishery? They obviously are clumping all together and getting where the water is, but what does that do long term or short term?
Part of the principle is, if you look at new reservoirs and when they're created, their best years are their first 10 years. Mm. Part of that process is that everything that's covered, all the brush, the whatever, you get a food chain that's kicked up and highly accelerated at the beginning of the life of a reservoir. And then there's usually a decline that comes after that. And a drought like this, also, you know, you think of, like, say, Wickiup, when it's full and it's a very fairly shallow lake, you've got all these shallows. And so the sun penetration, the warmer water heating up, you're kicking up the bottom of the food chain, peaking it in the shallows. And that's good for all. You want that. When you draw it all down and everything's confined, there's maybe some advantages to catching fish, but overall it never tends to benefit the fishery at all.
Gotcha.
So your higher water years will be followed by more productive fishing than what we go through in droughts. And obviously the end of a drought is, we got Chickahominy out here in the desert, and that thing goes flat out totally dry, so you lose everything.
Right.
And it's not the case with most of these lakes around here. They just go up and down.
Now, back to the guiding. What has been your biggest fish this year?
You know, as far as we know, it might have been the biggest brown weighted east this season. Huh. Though it's hard to say, because I'm sure people will catch them and pull on out. Some of those guys like to keep things quiet, and I understand that. But we had a 9-pound, 7-ounce, 29.5-inch hook jaw, really beautiful fish, caught back in mid-August. And it was really an excellent day because we had just caught a 6.5-pound hook jaw about 10 minutes before. Then the downrigger goes off, and the client, who was in his mid-70s, goes, "What's going on there?" And I was jigging lead core on another rod for whoever wanted to take the fish. So I was employing the downrigger on one side, working a rod myself on the other side, and the downrigger goes off, and it was that 9.5-pounder.
Wow.
As we were reeling in the lead core, the client's son was up front, and he also works at East Lake Resort. I asked him to come to my aid to grab the lead core rod and get the line out of the way. As he is, bang, he hooked up on a 4.5-pound hook jaw.
Three?
Which we had to kind of horse in, because I knew the other rod was, as soon as I got it out, as I got over to the downrigger and was getting out of the release, it just took off. And as I was handing off the rod to the client, I said, "You got a real good fish on." So we caught a 6.5, a 4.5, and a 9.5-pound brown in about 12 minutes, 15 minutes worth of time. So
it was
a pretty good outing that day.
Why have we never gone fishing? Why am I not ever on that boat? Man.
You know what? I don't know. We're going to have to do that. I'm absolutely going to get you out there. Next time you're over here, you just need to lead me a little bit, give me a call, and I promise you I'll set it up.
Absolutely. I'm going to take you up on that. Now, it just, looking at your website, I want to tell everybody, if you want to see a very well-designed website. Just visit Rick's site. It's trophytroutguide.com. And, you know, Rick, you have really had some wonderful experiences over your career since you've been in Bend and with your guiding. I love looking at all the photographs. But what I really enjoy are the videos that you shoot. And I want to talk about your taxidermy because you do some of the most beautiful fish mounts that I have ever seen. But tell me a little bit about this video and venture and this and the whole website venture that you've got going on right now. Tell us a little bit about what you're working on and doing there.
Okay, let me just clarify a couple of things to give credit where credit's due.
Sure.
You'll let me. On the taxidermy end of things, Randy, as you you may have known, but since we haven't seen much of each other in a while, I'm actually an agent for some brothers in Southern California who are excellent artisans, and they've got over 30 years' experience, so they get the credit for the work on the fish. I do it because I decided to create an agent position here in Central Oregon, and they wanted to work with me because there was no one doing very good quality fish taxidermy in Central Oregon, and I knew these guys would be able to do something better than was being produced here. So that's the setup on the taxidermy.
But yours is Rick's Trophy Mounts.
Yeah, and that's just because we decided to set it up and put my name on it. It's just a choice that we made, I think, originally, a business decision.
Since we're talking about the taxidermy, then let's just stay there, because you've got to go to Rick's site. It's, again, I'm just going to say it one more time. It's trophytroutguide.com. And what is it about your mounts? I mean, is there something about the mounts that you rep and the way that the guys do it for you, what is it that they do different? Because I really have never seen a mount as beautifully done as they do it.
Well, these guys, like I say, they've got over 30, it's two brothers, and they've got over 30 years together at doing this. And they actually have several world records to their credit. They have the world record calico bass out of Southern California. To their credit, they have a world record corvina, which is a saltwater surf fish, to their credit. And, of course, we did the state record brown trout here that was caught in Palina a couple of years ago. You know, it's a process of molding the fish, and when you mold a fish like that, you have the detail down to the scales, the imprint of the scales coming through exactly. So there's no better representation of a fish than actually molding the fish. You get back what you had. And then, of course, the airbrush artwork and that many years of working at it. And I'll give you an example. I caught my best bull trout last year, which isn't phenomenal, but it was a 15-pounder, which is a pretty nice one. I mean, the state record's 23. And when we got it back and we discussed it before they painted it, and they had some experience in doing a few, but there's nowhere in the country that you could catch and keep bull trout except a couple lakes in Montana and Billy Chinook here in Oregon. That's it for the whole United States. They're endangered species, and so anyway, there's not a lot of experience with painting them. And these guys are so good that on the first round, and they sent it to me, it wasn't quite what I wanted, and I got a more resource material via photographs and some literature that ODFW puts out to recognize bull trout. And I got them some more resource material. They went at it and repainted that thing for me and got it back, and they nailed it this time. So actually that 15-pound bull trout is on that taxidermy page near the bottom, and that was a recent addition to that page when I got it back.
So real quick, if somebody has one of these trophy trout or whatever fish, for that matter, it sounds like they do everything. How does somebody prepare a fish for mounting? And just give us a real quick rundown so that maybe if somebody's interested or whatnot, they can maybe get a hold of you.
Sure. It's pretty simple, and it's really misunderstood by most. But I could put it real simply for you. What you want to do with a fish is keep it damp, but that's all. Damp and cool. So I drive around with a 150-quart ice chest in the back of my truck all the time, just in case I run into somebody and they've got a fish. But if you want to protect the body of the fish, a wet towel over the fish is the best thing you can do to begin with. Okay. Keep it in something big enough where you're not bending the fins, you're not damaging the body, you're not putting ice on it at all. Mm. You're only keeping it cool and damp to keep the moisture in, to keep it hydrated. Mm. When you get it home, I recommend that you wrap it with Saran wrap carefully, keeping the fin straight.
Up against the skin or around the towel?
No, take the towel off.
Okay.
Yeah, we found out the hard way years ago that's a mistake.
Okay.
You'll dehydrate the fish while it's in the freezer frozen with the towel still around it.
Gotcha.
So no, the towel's taken off. The fish is laid up on Saran wrap, totally covered, and then place it carefully in a big enough freezer. And another mistake people have made, put a piece of cardboard down over the grill. You don't want those grill marks in the
right.
bottom of the fish. Give these guys the opportunity to work from either side.
Mm-hmm.
And just lay it flat. It takes about 4 days for most fish to freeze solid. And then if you call me, I'll get it. In fact, we'll meet one way or the other, and then I'll take it from there. And then I process it by sending it down to them, and then they'll mold it and go from there. Another option we have that I should mention, we have several molds, thousands of trout and other species of fish in all sizes. So if you've released that fish and you have a good photo, you know approximately what the length was, there's a good chance we can reproduce it from a mold we have in an existing fish close to the weight dimension of yours, and with your photo we can paint it accordingly.
Hmm. So I've heard of that process before, and where would you want to measure? Are you measuring from of tail to nose, and then are you measuring the girth? And if we're measuring the girth, where on the girth are we measuring?
Okay, yeah, you're going, the fish is rated, obviously it's a per inch that we use to determine the price of a fish. So it's the longest 2 points, tip of the head from jaw, the two longest points on the length of a fish,
okay,
to the tip of the tail is what we're going to use for the measurement. And then the girth would be the widest point. Usually that's just ahead of the dorsal,
okay,
all the way around a fish on most of them.
Right. And then
wherever you can see the biggest girth.
And then a broadside shot of either side, maybe top and bottom too, or?
Yeah, and what people usually neglect, they're anxious to get it up, and it's just human nature to hold it up when you've caught it and get a good picture.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody was really going to mount it, the smart thing to do, and we figured this out over time, is to lay it flat and get a good close-up picture of the fish laying there, bottom of the boat, top of an ice chest, whatever, just to get real good detail, spotting pattern, overall look of the fish.
Now, I had a real, one of the most exciting times I had was catching a steelhead that was 34 inches, and it was absolutely gorgeous. It was a little narrower than steelhead that I've caught in the past, but it had this beautiful gold leaf effect across its back. It was a real dark green, and then it went into that gold. Do they actually have gold leafing that's just real bright and shiny like that, or what do they do to achieve that real high shine that they always get?
You know, it's actually a process of you've seen with the popularity of these hot rod shows on TV and now the biker programs,
right,
where people are building bikes, and if you watch in those segments, the way people can paint now,
right,
and actually that's a process that's gone on for a lot of years, but where they can layer a lot of different colors and stuff.
Hmm.
Well, that's sort of overflowed into the taxidermy into things. Some of these guys are such artists that they can get different hues. You can stand there and look at a fish straight on and see one thing, get over to a side and pick up some hue from another angle.
Right.
So it's sort of an overlay of colors sometimes that they use to get an effect.
Well, that's a good description, because we all watch those shows and are amazed by the artisans that spray paint some of those cars, and it makes perfect sense. But one more time, just if you haven't seen these mounts on Rick's site, you got to take a little bit of time and visit them. Now back to your videos.
Right,
they're really fun to watch, and they're not always, you know, the clearest, but when are we going to be able to pick up a DVD or something of some of these shots that you have, because they really are fun to watch?
Right. Well, let me back up to say that what's on there now, for the most part, is just us guys screwing around with with a amateur video camera out there catching fish, and luckily we've been out there when we've got some good fish on, and so we've got some good footage of, you know, I did happen to get a 10-pound brown that I released to California a couple of years ago, and that's only about a 30-second shot of me getting it out of the live well and letting it go off the end of the dock, and some Mackinaws that we've caught up here that pushing 20 pounds, and some rainbows in the teens. And that is all just amateur footage, and I want to give credit to my web Mr. Guru down there, Mark Nock, that does some things for me in California, and he edits that for me. I just gave him basically some tapes, and he's edited it, produced these 30 to 1 minute clips of a few of the fish that we've caught. Now, we're going to take this up a notch, and Mark and I right now are actually getting ready to do some filming up in northern Idaho in the first part of November. We're going to go up and fish for the giant Girard rainbows that are in Ponderay Lake.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, that's a fishery that I've been lucky to. I started fishing it in the late 80s and usually make a trip up there every fall. That's the prime time when the turnover takes place and that water drops to around 50, which is anywhere from middle of October to the first part of November. Those big camps come up, and we catch them right on top.
Wow.
They're trolling in a system of using planer boards off of each side of the boat and long lines back off the planer board lines. And it's an exciting way to fish, and those fish are just unreal. So
Do they hit it pretty hard on those planer boards?
You know, I was hoping we could get to that.
Yeah.
You know, I've read people give accounts of 500, 600 feet, 700 feet of line coming off. Now, I haven't experienced that, and I'm not calling any other fisherman a liar. But I have.
I am.
but I have experienced about 300 feet of line coming off that reel instantly.
Wow!
And of course, those fish are 15 to 20 pound, and they do get up to even over 30 pounds. In fact, the world record 37-pound cam came out of there in the late 40s. So these things get huge, and they just take off like a freight train when they hit it.
And
so it's pretty exciting fishing.
If they're on the surface, where are they taking the line? Are they taking it out or down, or both?
You know, like I say, we fish off the planer board line, so we're running lures that are basically in the top 10 feet
right.
of the lake there. And when they hit those things, they're taking off. We're fishing 200 to 300 feet behind. So I've seen them come instantly to the surface and jump. I caught a 21-pound cam out of there in 1993, and that fish was so far back when it came up that we thought it was about 14 or 15 pounds. When we got it up to the boat and saw it, we knew it was around 20. It turned out to be 21 pounds. They'll not only, and they can get 4 or 5 feet in the air. So not only can they do these tremendous runs, those fish get airborne on you. And they're one of the most exciting freshwater trophy trout I've ever caught.
Wow. See, that's what I love so much about steelhead fishing is, you know, the salmon are awesome. They just a powerful pull down, and they stay on that standard underneath quite a bit. Every once in a while, they'll come up to the surface and do some acrobatics. But steelhead do that all the time, and it makes you nervous because they're whipping that line around and going from slack to tight to slack again. What is it? Are they real similar fighters than steelhead? The cams that you're catching?
You know, I don't have a as I've often said, I'm sort of a kid in a candy right up here in Central Oregon, and a lot of my friends ask me, well, how's the salmon fishing up there, or how you doing the steelhead? And I go, you know, I've lived here 10 years, and I have not fished for salmon or steelhead yet, because I have such opportunities right in my backyard, and I've invested all my time and energy in pursuing the species of trout I have right here, that I can't really give you a true comparison. I can only tell you what I have experienced with those fish. And those Girard rainbows up there, when they take off on an initial run, I think it's pretty much across the top, but then they'll end up sounding and going down. Mm. And you know, in some of these battles we've had, you'll get them up, and all of a sudden they're gone again.
Right.
And there goes a whole bunch of that line off the reel again, and then you start over and work them back up again. And most of those fish, the bigger fish in the teens to the 20s, on the tackle we're playing them on, they're 20-minute to half-hour fish before you get them out.
Well, see, you know, you've really got a niche going on. So many times you talk about the Northwest, and everybody's talking about salmon, steelhead, sturgeon on the Columbia here, and you don't really hear a lot about the kind of trout that you are fishing for, Rick. So you kind of have this niche. You're in a very elite group of lake fishermen. So I have no problem with you not coming down and fishing for steelhead. That's no, but not want you down there, but.
I might have to trade you out. You get over here and go out with me. I might have to come over there and go out with you. I still want to do that.
We need to. And it's yeah. It's really fun. I really enjoy fishing rivers. And I remember lakes are always wonderful because you can just relax. On the rivers, it's just a constant moving, and you've got to know what you're doing down, what's going on downstream, and most of the chutes down lower where the steelhead are, you have to dismount your boat and fish from the bank. But I've fished for browns on the Deschutes just below Wickyup, and what a kick that is! I've never caught anything like what you're talking about, but boy, I would love to just be able to say that I hooked into one of those big trophy brown trout or something like that. So yeah, we really do need to trade off, because some of the things you talk about are real similar to what we experience on the rivers with steelhead and the way the trout react. I mean, obviously steelhead are trout, but it's just really interesting to hear some of the stories that you had. And now we were talking about your video. And you're going to be going up and videoing up in Idaho. So why Idaho? And one more question that I need you to answer: Is Mark a big fisherman? Your web guy.
Okay. First question. Okay. We're going up there because, as I'd stated earlier, those are the biggest rainbows in the world, and Pend Oreille is famous. There are some other lakes up in British Columbia that have the Girard rainbows as well, and get about as big, though they don't own the world records. And that may be a trip in the future, but because I know Pend Oreille fairly well and have fished it, this is going to be our first professional video. This is going to be one where we've got equipment, and we've got some of my good friends are going along. Jim Bringhurst, whose brother was the world record holder for a brown trout out of Flaming Gorge in the late 70s. And Jim, of course, we met up through this association in the Brown Baggers Club, now has, and I'm guessing here, I think 32 brown trout over 10 pounds in the last 30 years. So he's a phenomenal trophy brown trout fisherman. I really enjoy fishing with Jim, have a lot of respect for him. He'll be along, and then John Worwe is another friend I met through the Brown Baggers, and John's got, I think, 5 now over 10 pounds over the years, and he was inaugurated year before up there, going along with us on the first trip for him, so he'll be back. This will be his third year, and of course, Mark and I have come to know each other in the last couple of years, and we've done this web thing together for the last year, and Mark's an excellent fisherman and fishes in the saltwater all the time down in Central California. And of course, Mark worked for Department of Fish and Game here in Oregon when he lived in Oregon years ago. Huh. So he's got the biological background as well. And we fished for our first time together here in August when he came up, and we fished for some browns over at Wickyup. And he caught a 7.5-pound hookjaw with me at East in the morning, and then we fished Wickyup in the afternoon. So we had an excellent outing that day as well. But,
wow.
And then, of course, one of the stars on this is going to be Gary Morales, a good friend of mine. Gary is the owner of Shasta Tackle Company. Gary's the premier guide on Lake Shasta in California. And, of course, he owns his own tackle company. And Gary and I have been friends for several years. Our association goes back to Scotty Downriggers when we first met. And Gary and I filmed an American Outdoor Journal episode over at Lalala Lake about 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And Gary's sort of paying me back on this trip.
Yeah.
Coming along to be my guest in this one.
Yeah, now what
so,
did you...
we got a real good team of excellent anglers and some real trophy anglers as well. And so we're really excited about this. This is going to be our first shot. It's going to be our first DVD. And then if this works out, we may be doing some others in a series, maybe going to fish for Big Mackinac at Flaming Gorge, and maybe who knows, maybe Lake Ontario for big browns back at the Great Lakes, because that's one of the strongholds for the real big browns in this country right now. And we might get a chance to travel around and fish some different fisheries and do some filming on trophy trout.
You know what's so exciting to me, Rick, is to see small guys like you and I and Mark. And, you know, you can watch all day, and it's real fun to watch, like, the big shows on ESPN and the Outdoor Network, so on and so forth, and watching these big productions. But, you know, what's really fun is watching the amateurs do it. And even though you're doing it professionally, we're still amateurs at
sure.
the video side. And it's fun to have this new media to share the things that we like to do. And, you know, nowadays it can be done fairly inexpensively. And I'm really excited about this. And when do you think you're going to have the DVD out again?
You know, we're trying to target. I've got a schedule of outdoor shows coming up this winter. I'll be kind of working for Walker Downriggers through two of the shows in Washington and then two of the shows in Oregon, and then also the Seattle Boat Show in January. So I thought that would be a good venue for us to, I'll be trying to sell some videos right there, as well as promoting my guide business and mainly promoting the Walker Downrigger line. So we're trying to get things together by about the first part of January.
Fantastic.
We'll be coming back from this trip middle of November, so he's going to have his hands full, but he thinks he can have something ready for me by the time I hit the show schedule.
Yeah, maybe get some pre-orders for Christmas there.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
Yep.
Well, that's
exciting.
We'll have
stuff up on the website, and then, of course, I'll be selling them through at the shows at probably a show special. We have got an exact dollar amount yet. But
right. Fantastic. So now what happens? You're going to be up there filming for how long?
Looks like we're going to have about 7 days of shooting, which is, you know, the way I look at it, you want as many days as you can. And once you're up there, one more day might be the difference, because we're hoping to get some shots, and this will be the big key on this thing of some really big rainbows.
And you have to have seven of the same shirt, seven of the same pants, so you look the same every day.
So, I don't know about that.
So in 7 days, you think, I mean, you think you got pretty good luck for catching some big ones in that time?
You know, I'll put it this way. You know, I've been very fortunate. I think my best year was 93, and I'd taken a friend up from California who'd never caught a trout over 2 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
First time up there with me. First day, he caught a 19.5-pound, 34-inch buck.
Wow.
Just fish of a lifetime.
Wow.
And then the next day, he caught an 18.25-pound female right before we went in at dark. And the third day, he picked up a 10-pounder. The weather changed. The sun came out, which you don't want up there.
Right.
You want it overcast all day if you can have it. And we went the rest of the week, and I think I was maybe had a 3-pound rainbow myself on the last day.
Oh, no.
I got that 21-pound rainbow that morning.
Wow.
So actually that trip we had 4 rainbows, 10 being the smallest, 21 being the biggest. And then last year, John Worry and Jim Bringhurst and I were up there for a week, and we had a pretty good week. We had over 50 cams to the boat, and I think we had a total of 5 over 10, with 2 of them right under 15 pounds. And there's pictures of those on the website as well. In fact, there's a story on my fishing reports page, the very first report, the bottom of it all, is the write-up on that trip last year. And so, listeners can get a little more detail if they want to look up that report.
Is that Rick and Jan's most excellent vacation?
Pardon?
Is that Rick and Jan's most excellent vacation?
No, but I'm glad you mentioned that. that was actually my trip this summer to Yellowstone.
I've
never been in my life, and I was dying to go. My 11-year-old grandson was here with us. He was dying to go. We went and visited friends in Idaho, drove up, spent 2 days touring parts of Yellowstone, which is so big you need to give it about a week to see it all. And then we came back down and through the Tetons, and then back down through Jackson Hole, and then back to their home in Soda Springs.
Hmm.
But part of that trip was a planned trip over to Flaming Gorge Reservoir on the Utah-Wyoming border to fish for monster kokanee.
Oh,
and
wow.
Due to a problem with schedules, it got reduced to a half-a-day trip with a good friend of mine that lives in Rock Springs, Wyoming, John Krumpetich. And John had us out in his sea swirl for half a day, and we lucked out and got my grandson a pending world record kokanee, 4.09-pound kokanee.
Really?
We caught over there that morning,
huh.
and it beats the record for an 11-year-old by 2 pounds, 2 ounces.
Oh,
so it looks like we should have the paperwork back probably in a few weeks.
Yeah,
we caught 22 kokanee that day that averaged 3 3/4 pounds. So
wow.
That is amazing.
That is amazing.
The numbers and size.
Yeah. So now when you pick up these fish, where are you sending them to get your... To get the world record? Are you sending them to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, or?
No. The main governing body, I don't know, maybe probably some real serious fishermen know this, a lot of people don't know, but it's the IGFA, International Game and Fish Association, based in Florida, here in the United States. They are the number one governing body for world records, going back 66 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you want to do is contact them, and I think it's IGFA.org, I believe, for the website. And in, of course, you can download forms, applications. You can purchase the book that lists all the world records and even gives line class records.
Huh.
It's really a neat organization.
So now, do you have to send the fish to them?
No, you don't. But you have to verify the catch. They have to be weighed on. For children, they're more lenient.
Mm-hmm.
For an adult, you have to jump through a lot of hoops. Submit line samples, have witnesses, wait on certified approved scales, verified in that year.
So where do you find these scales? And I mean, are there?
You can go to a grocery store.
Oh, really?
You can go into a meat department. Those scales have to be certified. You can imagine they're selling hamburger by the pound.
Sure, sure. So we're talking like a USDA certified scale.
Yes.
Okay. I'm on the same page now.
Gotcha.
and you can actually
weigh them on your own scale, and then submit your scale.
Oh.
To them.
Send them.
They'll tinker with it.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
So it's really interesting. It's an interesting process. A friend of mine here in Bend had got a 10-pound brown for his son when his son was 10 years old a few years back, and they qualified, and he is in the books, Ryan Amaranjan.
Wow.
A 10-pound brown for a 10-year-old boy, and that record is still standing as a world record.
Well, you know, I've never sent mine in. I could have been passing up several world records.
Probably lots of them come and gone. People weren't aware.
Right. Well, I'm sure. So now, as far as you were talking about your trip, I'm looking for the fishing report that you were talking about here. I found Rick and Jan's, but which one were you talking about now?
Okay. Scroll down to the very bottom.
Okay. Because I've got to see pictures. I'm a visual guy.
First one.
Okay. There it is, on the 8th of November.
Right.
Jim Bringhurst and John Werwe. That's the one, huh?
Yep.
Man, I just love your pictures. Love them. Oh, man. I've got to get some more pictures on my website, too. This is just too much fun.
And you know, a lot of those pictures are actually from a lot of my friends and even just people that have stumbled onto my website,
mm-hmm.
enjoyed it, sent me their pictures. So I'm open to putting anybody's pictures up of their trophy fish on my website. That's not my little thing there.
Right.
It's I'm sharing this with anybody that's got any trophy fish.
Yeah, that is...
I like to keep it specific to trout, and as you look at my galleries, you can see it's set up by trout species, including kokanee.
Mm-hmm.
I even have a file on there for miscellaneous photos. Some of them are funny. Some of them are very beautiful, excellent photos that people have sent me. So I'm open to taking photos from anybody that wants to send me some. And,
oh,
and
sure.
Of course, I decide which ones go up. But it isn't just my stuff. It's from viewers that send me things as well.
I've never had luck in catching trout in the lakes. And, you know, mine are all little 12-inchers and stuff like that. So I got to
get on
your boat.
Oh, that'll be easy. I can get you. If you're stuck on 12 inches, I'll get you your biggest trout. First few minutes you're out with me.
Oh, great.
I think I could beat that 12-incher.
Great. Well, now tell me, Rick, what kind of boat and equipment do you take out?
I've got an 18.5-foot aluminum weld intruder that's pretty nice rig.
Mm-hmm.
Got it set up with Walker Electric downriggers right now, and I fish a black box, which introduces low voltage cable current to my cables,
mm-hmm.
which is what I call a sweetening effect through science. Better fishing through science, they have discovered that electricity's going on in that world for those fish as well,
sure.
And they are attracted to low voltage at certain voltages. Higher voltages can repel them, and lower voltage may not have a real low voltage may not have any effect on them. But they, through testing and the development of this black box, they determined that, and this has been proven. It's been used in the salmon industry in the ocean for over 30 years,
right,
at a commercial level. So I have that as well as, let's see, I've got a full 40-inch wide live well that I've had a 30-pound lake trout in the front of it, keep him alive and still put him back. And it's a very comfortable boat. I have it set up very comfortably for as many as three people to fish with me besides myself.
Fantastic. And so what are some of your favorite methods of fishing? Your favorite style? And I mean, obviously you've been down rigging forever since I've known you, and repping several different companies of down riggers. But what are some of your favorite techniques?
Well, you know, styles? Probably the most fun of all, I think, is flat lining. You know, basically a casting rod and reel,
mm-hmm.
And I like using nice equipment, so I'm pro staffer with Shimano, so all my reels are Shimano, and I'm using more Shimano rods as well. They have some good lines of rods, but say a 7-foot casting rod with a Shimano Calcutta 400 on there, and I like the long line way back for the browns when you can work in shallow and get in that 10 to 20 foot range right before dark or first thing in the morning when the browns are more susceptible in the shallows, and to have a lure 250 or 300 feet back there, so far back that those fish forgot a boat went by the time the lure gets there.
Sure.
And landing those or hooking those browns, if you're fortunate enough to land them, on top like that, top lining, flat lining,
mm-hmm.
is and having the rod, because I employ a technique of jigging the lure, where we're actually trolling at speeds of anywhere from 2.5 to 3.5 miles per hour, depending on the lure, because lures obviously operate at different speeds, different lures. But we call it rip jigging or rip trolling, or there's all kinds of little slang terms, but you're actually imparting an action to the lure, making it race forward and drop back, as well as maintaining a speed.
By just jerking
it?
Are you just jerking a little bit, giving it a little tug every once in a while?
Yeah, sometimes I'm a little more exaggerated than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I try and not just get into a flat cadence, which you can fall into, but I try and mix it up a bit.
Right.
And it's proved to be deadly. Browns are very susceptible to that technique, and I've seen countless excellent brown trout fishermen use this technique all over out west here. Pretty universal.
Mm-hmm. And now, so what about when you're trolling? Because it sounds like that's what you do the most of. when you're trolling, are you basically going in a straight line, finding a spot where the fish are, and then just straight up and straight back? Are you doing zigzags through there?
I do some turning. Okay. I do some turning. There's a lot of people that think it's, you know, what you're doing, because it would depend on how I'm trolling. But let's say that I was just on downriggers or in rod holders. Mm-hmm. I think it's good to do an S pattern back and forth because you're causing lures to pick up speed, drop speed. So see, you're imparting action, just but you're doing it with a boat. And you're also moving the boat out of the way. Maybe it didn't go over those fish that lure comes along to later. So there's a lot of good reasons to do that. If you're just moving the lure, sometimes it will just work a shoreline, and I'll work it straight down the shoreline. And I've had enough success both ways that it works. And then, of course, I've gone back to a technique that I used for a lot of years, and I just kind of got back into it this year. It's called lead core line. And that's lead line in a Dacron sheath, and they rate it by poundage anywhere from 12 on up to maybe 65 pound. And it's got a sink rate of 3 to 5 feet per 10 yards of color, which is 30 feet. And of course, that depth rate would depend on your speed. The slower you go, the deeper it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I employed the technique up here this year on East Lake. And then over when I was fun fishing Wikia, when I was guiding, of rip trolling with the lead core. And it gives you depth control and allows you to move the lure as well as get a greater depth, too. The downside is it's not quite as much fun to play them on that lead line. But when you're going for big fish, it's a deadly technique. And it worked real well this year up at East and Wikia when we were trolling for browns. Because basically what's happening, those fish are in the thermal cline. Mm-hmm. When the lake goes into stratification early in the summer and it stays there through most of the summer, those fish a lot of the time are at 30 to 45 feet in these lakes.
So,
and your graph will prove it. You just drive out there and turn it on, and they're there a lot of the time. So
when
you were basically just putting the lures in the zone that they're comfortable with, where their oxygen or temperature level is right. The thermal cline.
Right. And when we're talking about that temperature change, the thermal cline, and wanting to be in cooler water, does the rain help on lake fishing also when it rains? I mean, we're getting dumped on, and I was in a couple of fishing stores today, and, man, I mean, people were running around buying stuff all excited because the rain is just going to be moving the fish through there. Does it activate fish in the lake as much as it does on rivers?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you that one of the factors that is going on is the pressure change, because usually with these lows coming, the bottom's falling out of the barometer.
Mm-hmm.
And on some species of trout, it may give them a little case of lockjaw for a while there. And bass fishermen know this for sure, and I learned this when I lived in California and fished at my little local lake down outside of Porterville, Success Lake, for bass, and belonged to the bass club. Sometimes at the onset, when that low was coming in right at the beginning, those bass would turn on right at the beginning of it at the fall. But once it got down there, they shut off, and they may have stayed shut off as long as that low pressure hung around for a few days and fishing were slower. I've experienced some of that with the brown trout, where it might be good on a falling barometer, and it's been said by lots of guys that foul weather brown trout fishing, and I've experienced both good fishing in fair weather and good fishing in foul weather. But to tell you overall truth, of most of my trophies, it's come in better weather. So the rain itself, I don't know that it has that much factor. I think probably the barometer has a bigger difference on the fishing in a lake than does the actual rain.
Before when we talked earlier, when I was in Ollie Damon's shop today, you know, he loves you so much, and he loves talking
the
about
richer
you.
Than he
goes. Oh, yeah. And, boy, if you called it foul language in there today, they would have strung you up, Rick. Boy, these guys over in the valley here, they love that pouring rain. So, how much research do you do on these fish, Rick? I mean, do you do a lot of the, research on how their habit or their makeup creates their strikes, and I mean, how much of that does that help you in catching more fish?
I think it's it is an education process, and as I've gotten older and time's gone by, I've gotten interested in reading more. I try and apply what I actually learn out there on the water, what you learn from experience, what you've seen, you know, the windows of opportunities when bites occur. You know, I don't think I'm ever going to figure it out,
no.
but I have learned a lot. And so it's, I think it's key is putting a lot of little things in your favor and then putting a lot of time on the water.
Right.
And the old adage that 10% of the fishermen catch 90% of the fish, I think is fairly accurate. And that's probably true because those 10% take it so serious and really do commit to it and get into it. And as you and I talked about before, having a deep love for your sport where you'll really dig in.
Right.
And you just love being out there and you usually don't get burnout on it.
You know, you're exactly right, because I know, you know, it has to do with, you know, everybody's saying moon phases and tide fluctuations, barometer, weather, rain. But, you know, you hit on something that I think is very, very important. When you are doing your best at seeking knowledge about the kind of fish that you're really pursuing, it gives you somewhat of a confidence. And I know that the years that I fished really hard and everything was going great in my life and with my fishing, I knew I was going to catch a fish. But recently, boy, there's been some challenges at home, you know, or you know, I had a bad week or whatever, or if I just happen to have to deal with responsibilities versus talking about my passion of fishing, it makes my fishing suffer. And, you know, I went out a couple weeks ago with my buddy up on the Deschutes, on the mouth of the Deschutes, and we were fishing for steelhead, and, you know, we make it kind of a competition, and you know, we rib each other, and I hooked up with the first one, and, you know, just pulling one of the old lures out of my vest that I'd fished successfully years ago with, and I backed that thing right down into this sweet spot of the river and hooked one up, and he was, you know, Mark is my buddy's name. Mark went out, started casting, and he hooks one up, you know, 2 seconds later, and, you know, I never got another bite that day, and it just, you know, he took the wind out of my sail. And, you know, that makes a big difference, at least in what I've acknowledged or when I've experienced, is that attitude of going out and knowing what you're going to do. And it just seems like every time I talk to you, you've got some new lure you're researching or some new technique. And, you know, that's what I love, coming over there at the sportsman shows and invading your booth for a couple hours. And
well, you know, you hit on a key thing, and maybe that is something that... I could go out there and be fishing, and sometimes I'll just, you know, you get on a pattern, or you've got a lure and it's working, and I'll purposely change up,
right,
just to see what'll happen. And you know, that's sort of how you build your experiences, to know which lures you can trust, what you can do. You've got to have a willingness at some point to be able to experiment, and maybe that's where the average fisherman gets left over in that 90% group, because of his unwillingness to do some things different.
Exactly.
And maybe dig a little deeper. Maybe he's just going to go out there and keep lapping. I'll give you an example. We were up at Billy Chinook yesterday. The bull trout are staging up there right now before they go up. And there were some other boats in the area. We pulled up there. This is a drill I stumbled onto last year for the first time, and it was phenomenal. Caught the greatest numbers of bull trout in 3-4 hours. And we got up there were kokanee there, turned on the graph, deja vu. And there they were, and it was a depth control game, and we had downriggers, and we had lures that we had confidence in, and we put them down, and bang, we ended up, I think we started fishing about 2, and by 6:30, we had caught and released 20 bull trout.
Wow.
Probably had 6 or 8 others on. And, you know, there were 3 other boats up in that area, and those guys stuck with their drill. Mm-hmm. And we never saw them catch a fish.
Yeah, I was just writing the fishing tip for this week on our newsletter, and it was exactly that. One of my things is when I'm in the river and nobody's catching anything, I take a real close look. I'll take a few minutes to just watch what people are casting out there. And if they're not catching anything and everybody's using that same thing, it's minor as a color. Not necessarily.
Color
changes,
you bet.
Yeah, and, you
so
know.
It's a willingness to experiment.
Right, and that's.
Keep mixing it up till you can make something happen.
Right. They're going to be down there. They're going to strike on something. And, I don't know, you know, to really grind it into my craw that day, Mark, at the end of the day, he caught one as we were just about burned out because it was warm that day. And I walked over and I said, Mark, what'd you use? He had picked up a lure as we were walking down to this section of the river we were fishing. He picked up a lure off the rocks, tied it on, and caught one. And I just hate that. I hate it.
Yeah, that was insult to injury.
Oh, it was. Well, hey, Rick, you know, I've probably taken up too much of your family time. And, you know, I want to thank you again for, you know, being such a great guest and giving the information.
My pleasure, Randy.
That, and we're gonna keep in touch more now than we ever have. And we're going to get together. We're going to do that fishing trip one of these days. And
I'd love to get you out. Like I say, you get a hold of me about, let's say from the middle of July to the middle of August next year, and I'll take you out and show you some things that are really interesting.
Oh, fantastic. And
get you into some nice brown trout as well.
You bet. Well, now, just for all the listeners, you can go once again to Rick's website at trophytroutguide.com and find everything you want to know about Rick. I encourage you to do so, or go to the Reels and Rounds website. And there's a lot of information. We've got Rick's link to his website from our blog, and we're going to be writing a little bit about it. And you can download the podcast all you want and listen to Rick's interview that I had today with him. And Rick, is there any other way that we can get a hold of you that you want to share now?
Sure.
Phone or whatever?
You betcha. You can reach me at my the guide service phone is area code 541. 317-4103, and I'm not afraid to give out my cell number either. So you could call me on my cell at 541-480-1570, and I'd love to take anybody out that wants to get out and get after some nice brown trout or some bull trout, and I just, like I said earlier, I just try to make it as enjoyable experience as I can for whoever goes with me.
Perfect. And we're going to keep you all updated on Rick's DVD launch and any other products that you decide you want to get out there, Rick. So we're looking forward to this this early year, next year, and Christmas maybe even. So I'm going to be looking in my stocking for that DVD.
There you go. I'm sure I'll have one for you.
Great. Well, hey, thanks again, Rick, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Randy.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.